Permanent Supportive Housing, Episode 1.
Of course, homelessness doesn't only exist in our country and the world today, but it's been a major part of human psychology and a destructive part of human psychology for centuries. Thanks so much for joining us for the first show of a collective series designed to present a comprehensive, permanent solution to homelessness. I'd first like to introduce my closest friend who will be the host for this podcast and beyond, who's been my partner in the Global Bridge Foundation, and we've virtually done everything together over the last 50 years, our psychological background, our various explorations in the spiritual world, and I'm extremely grateful to have Dave here to join me.
And I will say it's great to be here. I feel excited to explore this. I think it's really important. It's really the time to take a look at solutions, and your passion around it has developed some amazing ideas.
So today we'll be looking at primarily the psychological elements that prevent homelessness and the solutions being activated and envisioned. This is going to be the first of a series, so we're starting off with dominantly the psychological components, and then we'll be filling in the vast detail. Today, we'll be looking at the psychological elements that prevent homelessness solutions that have been envisioned so far, and try to broaden that dialogue and present a concrete proposal. We're asking everyone to be involved, asking you to be involved at your highest level of potential interest to be part of the conversation and not to assume that we're giving answers. We are giving our best suggestions for answers, but we invite you to contribute in whatever way you can to further it at whatever locale you find yourself. We're also going to begin to propose the details of a comprehensive, permanent, supportive housing solution. Of course, homelessness doesn't only exist in our country and the world today, but it's been a major part of human psychology and a destructive part of human psychology for centuries. It's been a major issue throughout history where the people that are in power haven't really focused on giving opportunities to people that are homeless or are in deep poverty. It's very much a symptom of a pervasive problem that relates to attitudes and perceptions surrounding wealth and power.
Robert, clearly, and thank you for being with this topic and this subject and the suffering that has been throughout these centuries. Can you tell us something about your path to your path to the passion about this issue, how you got here?
Whenever I walk out of my door and I see someone that is in the streets, or I even have the awareness of people being poor, it's absolutely heartbreaking to see people that don't have an opportunity to survive and thrive. And it's been a continuous source of suffering since I was in my teens. It seems so unfair that such a large part of our society has a chance to have hundreds or thousands of times the resources to create benefit and have discounted a level of potential responsibility to help give opportunities to the poor. Now, that's often misconstrued as a giveaway to the poor, but I'm not talking about just giving money to the poor. This proposal is focusing on giving opportunities to develop their maximum potential psychologically, vocationally, and in every way possible, housing, food. So it's a comprehensive proposal to give everybody on the earth, ultimately, in the most grandiose sense, a chance to survive. And I think if the conversation is largely focused on that, it's very hard to disagree with.
Help me understand, because you said something very important that creates so much resistance in our society. What differentiates supporting the homeless from a giveaway? How is it not a giveaway?
it's not a giveaway in that each individual is going to be asked to really potentiate the maximum life they can possibly live. The communities are going to symbolize maximum efforts. So if you have a person that's homeless that has a drug addiction problem, they're going to be asked to work on the drug addiction. If you have someone that's unemployed, they're going to be asked to do their very, very best to take advantage of the vocational opportunity and training that's being given. So there's no one that's getting a free lunch. And there's also not an unrealistic sense that everybody's going to do the same thing.
Would you say then, and I think this is part of the argument I think you're implying, because there is a cost right now to having homeless in our society. And just in dollars and cents, just talking to people that you're describing that have the economics, that have the money, and just saying, look, there's a cost to having them and there's a cost to taking care of them. And how does that balance out? And let's take a close look at it.
Yeah, when you look at the emergency room visits and you look at the disease and you look at the crime and you look at the extra police that's needed, the amount that it would take to just house the homeless in a low cost, highly efficient, targeted services, we could make a very good case that our society is actually going to gain money. And that's not even considering the evolution that each individual can go through and becoming a participating member, a contributing member to society. That's just doing the math before they even develop.
So Robert, in a sense, what you're saying is we're blind to the benefit. We don't see it. We have a society that would overall on a net basis gain, economically gain, even if you don't have compassion. And yet it's not happening.
That's exactly right. You know, the math, which has been done in a lot of different ways, which we'll get more into in future episodes, shows that if you take out those emergency visits and those extra expenses, there would actually be an economic gain. So it's doubly tragic because there's a chance of a gain and then another gain of people actually being able to contribute. And then there's a third gain, which is all of us, as we walk down the street and we see someone that's homeless, we feel a connectedness and they feel a connectedness. And we have the gain psychologically and in our hearts, in our integrity, our character, to feel like we're connecting rather than isolating.
One of the things, and thank you for that, that's very clarifying and important. I really feel that it kind of nails down the essential illogic view that we all have. And I know with people with wealth in your life, you've dealt with those people quite a bit. You know that they have the capacity without compromising their own well-being at all to contribute, yet not wanting to create guilt, yet wanting to motivate. Even myself, I walk out the door and I see what you're describing. How do I plug in? How do I plug in? How do I support it? How do I make it happen in a way it seems like it's so large, so huge, so hard to manage a solution as an individual?
Thanks for that comment. I think it's a very important one. Those that have some degree of wealth find it very conflictual to even have the courage and the humility and the sensitivity to actually swap roles with people who are born in life situations and they don't have the opportunity. And one of the major keys is we're not trying to support guilt. We're trying to touch a place inside each of us where those that have the extra opportunity to help can find a place inside that wants to help and is looking for the yes rather than the critique.
So I'm traveling the world, which we all have to our own degree. I'm in places where people approach me as I get off a train, an airport, I'm walking down a street, say where I live in California. It feels I'm at a stoplight. I'm having people approach my car. Sometimes it feels threatening. As much as I want to give, it's hard to lower the window. There is an inherent conflict I myself feel about how to reach beyond just the reaction to somebody coming towards me with those needs and feeling overwhelmed by it and feeling unable to really touch it in a way that's going to make a difference.
Yeah, I experienced it the same way. And the difficulty is we're seeing the symptoms of this care for the homeless people not really being made a very top priority, other than the great providers that are doing great work. But that, unfortunately, is only reaching about 1-2% of the population, a very small percentage of the population. So that, what you're describing, is the inspiration and the motivation to come up with a comprehensive plan that is going to take the homeless dominantly off the streets so we aren't put in that position. And often we're left being judgmental, feeling like they're a burden. And we frequently have this rationale that, well, they're homeless because they're not as motivated, they're not as disciplined, they're mentally unfit. And we have these judgments that their net worth, which is zero, is equal to their worthiness. And it's a crucial, crucial thing to see. That if I were given their lack of opportunity, we could easily be in their situation. And so it requires this kind of forethought and brainstorming on the part of government, philanthropy, hopefully even corporations, to see that these kind of rationalizations that, oh, it's a motivation problem. Oh, it's simply a mental illness problem. Oh, it's simply a problem that, oh, if I were there, of course I'd be able to overcome it. And that kind of thinking allows people that have the means and the resources often to rationalize. And then when it comes down to the street level that you're talking about, it's already way past the chance of even considering a long-standing, sustaining solution. So they're showing up in our neighborhoods and we're judging them as burdensome, as if we could do better. When in reality, we're the ones that have some power, whether it be philanthropy or whether it be the government or whether it be certain corporate entities, and we need to come up with a, might be called a pre-solution, that really gives the opportunities for people to develop rather than seeing the after effects of no creative solutions really being brainstormed on a larger scale to take care of the homeless.
I think what you said is so important to really take a moment and feel into the feeling of there they are. If we were them, we wouldn't be in their shoes. We would be able to take care of ourselves. The lack of really being able to empathize in a way, really putting ourselves in their place and understand it without overlaying it with looking down and saying, you know, if they were, as you said, if they were going to motivate themselves, they could lift themselves up by their own bootstraps. They could do what they need to do. It's clearly the various elements and the things that the types of folks that are standing on street corners are so varied. And so, it, you know, from people that have been in the military to people that say, hey, I've got two kids, to not even trusting that their signs are real. That their signs aren't a manipulation. It's so far away from feeling empathy.
That's exactly right. And what I would say is, when we see the homeless, and what I try to do myself is, I try to envision their background, and not really just envision the surface appearance of someone in front of me. I wonder what kind of family they had. I wonder what kind of opportunities they've been exposed to. I wonder what kind of connections they have, and develop some kind of a deeper understanding other than the surface appearance of inconvenience. One of the things that the founder of microfinance, Muhammad Yunus, talked about and showed was that when given small loans in third world countries, the payback rate to the banks was very similar to people that were wealthy. He demonstrated in concrete ways that there was that motivation, there was that discipline, there was that focus. And it speaks right to the heart of the misperception that each of us have and are vulnerable to, including myself. If I'm in a little bit of a mood and somebody's knocking on my window or they're walking by while I'm at a stoplight, I can feel feelings of annoyance, but I also feel an embarrassment and a shame that I'm not seeing their story. I'm not really looking deeply. So the intent of this permanent supportive housing proposal that's comprehensive is to give people those opportunities that not only this society, but societies throughout history really haven't made a significant priority. There's always been good people that have done good works, as there are now in Los Angeles and pretty much all throughout the world. But unfortunately, the elements of keeping it affordable and seeing how it can be comprehensively useful and supportive haven't really been drilled down and agreed to by the major power sectors that have the wealth and the means to give it an experiment.
In the sense of you're referring to power centers and people with the means, who are these people? Are we talking about structurally the government? Are we talking about entities? Are we talking about the, and of course, underneath all of that are people that vote for the people that are in government or people that support philanthropy? I mean, it does come down to people, but it also comes down to large investments. Where do they come from?
I think there are three possible sources. Certainly one is every level of significant government, whether it's state, federal, city, or county. A second one is larger philanthropic entities or a lot of philanthropic entities that aren't the larger ones. And the third one are B corporations, which are corporations that are established to have social welfare be the number one priority and profit being number two. Ideally, it would be a combination of all of these power centers coming together, being part of a brainstorming, and every locale would have a unique mixture, and there's not a one-size-fits-all.
Why isn't this conversation happening? Why is this a missing conversation?
I believe the largest reason why this is a missing conversation is because people that have a comfortable lifestyle are very much living in that comfortable lifestyle and aren't taking the time to deeply empathize and get through those rationalizations that the homeless are really people that don't have the same worthiness. They're less intelligent, they're less motivated, they're less inspired. We may be throwing our money away. People have tried Section 8 housing. They've tried numbers of things where they feel like, it just doesn't work. But from my vantage point, the programs that have started have done great work in a small percentage of the population. But some of the bigger programs like Section 8 only takes into consideration housing. It doesn't take into consideration food. It doesn't take into consideration vocational training. It doesn't take into consideration psychological guidance. And people that haven't had this kind of opportunity need the optimal support to have a chance to really survive and thrive.
So I'm assuming that the program, as we go on into these podcasts, will address more specifically how the variety of needs you're describing and even more can be addressed.
That's exactly right. We'll be covering immense details from everything from less expensive housing that might be tiny homes or trailers or mobile homes in communities that would be on the outskirts, so we would avoid some of the problems with neighborhoods objecting to housing source, including food sources that could really distribute food in a very economical way through a wider spectrum of the population. to vocational training, to using master's program in psychology to have interns that could be done extremely effectively, rather than having to spend a lot of money on that, so that these individuals would really be shown how to, in the future episodes, to economically and comprehensively have a chance to really survive and thrive. There's also white papers on the robertstrock.org website that are on the same themes of a gradual revealing of how the program could be developed, the psychological difficulties that we're exploring dominantly today, to the minute details of comprehensiveness that could be economically creating an alternative to the homeless population.
So as I hear this, and as I feel today's reality, and today's reality, at least as we are now, is a pandemic, is a recession, is a time unprecedented in our lifetimes, no matter how old we are, where even if people wanted to give, there's a majority, there's a large swath of our population that does not have the means, that does not have the economic capacity, even if they wanted to participate. How do we apply what we're doing here to the realities of this today?
I'm really glad you brought that up, because it brings another element of the comprehensive proposal, which is there are many different individual groups, including the group you're talking about, which are people that are underemployed or unemployed because of COVID and the pandemic that we're facing. They would be one of the groups that would be offered a community. In addition, I'll just give a sense of some of the other groups that would include people that have suffered from natural disasters, people that are dealing with drug addiction problems, alcohol addiction problems, people that are vets, single women, families. All of these communities would either be on their own, or depending on the individual locale, maybe some of the ones that felt safe together could be joined, depending on the city and depending on what the local decisions come up with.
Thank you for that. I think that's so important in today's times to understand and to see the inclusiveness and flexibility of who is included based upon the times we live in.
Totally agree. And I just want to thank all the viewers for really taking this in personally and being part of the conversation and the brainstorming. And as you hear the details being filled in future episodes, please get to a yes and emphasize more how you would move toward a solution if you have anything more to contribute, and optimize your individual situation, whether it's as a volunteer, whether it's somebody you know to communicate with, whether it's the government, whether it's a philanthropic agency. And I greatly want to thank you for joining us. And if you're interested in continuing the conversation in a concrete way to address homelessness in some real way, to reach out to me at robertstrock.org and continue this very, very important conversation for our society. Thank you very much.